You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to our tournament recap show for the 2024 Guinness Men's Six Nations Championship. On a weekend where Peter O'Mahony captained Ireland to an 11th championship in total, we are ready for a celebratory pod. So crack open the can, sip away at the Pinot Grigio, or reminisce on your morning commute. It is time to be joyful, unlike some broadcasters. Anyways, joining me for the St. Patrick's Day morning are Adam Latham, Hugh Griffin and Jack Fogarty, as well as Munster fan turned debutant Ben Leahy. So welcome on, everyone.
Hello, hello.
Good morning.
Morning.
It's good to have you all here, all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, as they say. We will start, though, in Dublin, where there's not going to be a lot of people bright-eyed and bushy-tailed this morning, that's for sure. After a lackluster mixed bag of a performance, Ireland lift the title aloft for consecutive years. Ben, we'll start with yourself. You're the man on the ground. I'll let you take the lead, sum up the emotions, and it was an emotional rollercoaster to be for sure.
It was. I think the build-up during the week was quite, I don't want to say muted, but certainly I think after last week, with all the media talk of Ireland, the best team in the world, to fall flat in your face last week. A lot of people were kind of like, the Grand Slam is gone. Does this week really matter? We should beat Scotland anyway. Fast forward to the anthems. You know, there's a dry seat in the house in the Aviva. I mean, when the camera panned to Peter, atmosphere rose, everyone was in tears, and it was, okay, let's just go and do it. I will say Scotland were tremendous. For most of that game, Scotland were terrific. They were gritty. They did not give us a sniff. Probably unlucky to go at halftime behind. Muted the Aviva to levels I haven't seen. I haven't been that quiet since last time Leinster played there last year. It was awful for most of the first half. Porter's try was needed. It came at a point when if we hadn't scored there, Scotland see out that game. Scotland get two more penalties, they win that game, and we look awful. That being said, once Porter does go over, we're relatively dominant from there.
Yeah.
It was a very good game. The crowd didn't really help in any sense. There was a lot of just, okay, we'll beat Scotland, it's fine.
But yeah, no, it's true. And like, the fact that I mentioned this on Twitter during the game, it went from was Furlong not gone the first one, and then we give up easy ball. Then there's the Henshaw held up, and then we compound that with an error. And this had happened two or three times, despite being totally dominant in that third quarter. It was compounded errors.
Ringwell's not gone as well. Just like if he catches that, he's in. Win that game relatively
and that was,
easily.
Like I can't blame Ringwell for that. That pass was behind him.
No, the pass wasn't great. You had Calvin as well. If Calvin doesn't turn in,
that was the other one. Yeah,
like
I can see why he does it. He's got a big number six up against him.
Yes, there's three in front of him. But I was again at the end of the pitch, and I was very much just dive, just run the straight line, bank yourself, go in the corner, end the game.
Yeah.
I don't know how it came across on TV, but Russell seemed to have quite a good game.
Russell was good. I don't think his midfield was good, but I think he was good.
No, he wasn't helped, and he had no assistance either side of him really. But when he got ball in hand, some of his kicks through were terrific.
Yeah.
And I sent
Excuse
you on a stat this morning. They kicked as much as we did,
me.
which I wouldn't have expected from Scotland, seeing a tournament is gone. And Russell dominated every piece of ball he got. He was absolutely tremendous. He really was. Look, tournament's over. Ireland champions again. There's worse things.
It's easy to look at Finn's game and say, oh, he looked small or he looked whatever. But I think if you're looking at the midfield as a whole, I think Finn and Jack probably had similar games from a different viewpoint. Jack made more obvious mistakes, but he had to drag Ireland through. There was an awful lot of mistakes either side of him. Finn had nothing either side of him and he had to drag them from that regard. He didn't make as many mistakes, but he had nothing to feed off of. And then the centres, I thought the battle of the two Tardines was phenomenal. It was like a low-key version of the Allende against Bundy from the World Cup, where Jones does something well, then Edgehead does something well, and back and forth. And then I thought Bundy was really good. Someone said he had a couple of defensive errors. He missed one tackle. Like,
Bundy
he
had a
missed.
wonderful game. I
And that was
mean,
just a case of McDowell just, I'm just gonna, commit, and then change my mind, which is what Ireland do very well.
I know we'll come to it later, but I mean, Bundy's player of the tournament for me. He again yesterday. I had him as player of the match. Thought he was tremendous. I was surprised Scotland didn't play Redpath. I thought he'd come in. He's done very well for Glasgow when he has played. For him not to start, and then for the 13, his name I never forget, had a
In
wonderful game.
Jones.
Jones had a terrific game. No,
I'll move on to you, Adam, because scrappy is kind of what Ben's alluding to, what I am. And it was too close for comfort at the end until we finally gained possession on that second to last ruck or third to last ruck. But it was a win. It was a title win. And most importantly, this squad needed to get over the line, no matter how they needed it.
100%. I think with fans, we're absolutely taking this as like this is a celebration. This should be celebrated. We look at last year with the Grand Slam, and everyone's just like, "Oh, we can do it again. We can do it again." Then the dampening of spirits last week. I can't imagine what it would be if and how the squad would react, and how I would class some of the armchair fans would react. That would only sort of watch the Six Nations if we lost that. I think the squad needs it 100%. I think Jack Crawley needed that just to settle him as the definite 10 for Ireland going forward. I think he is. I think he is the definite 10. I think there's a lot of talk about him moving to centre, and I just don't think that would work with the way we play. But I think we needed that. We needed that a lot. And also, I think we needed that for Pete as well, judging by the rumors and the sort of is he going, is he not? I'm sure he wouldn't have announced it when he was talking. Like I don't think he's the type to announce it before a game. I don't think he wants the spotlight on him. He just wants the spotlight on the squad.
Someone said that, like Peter Manny, like Johnny Sexton, like Rory Best, like whoever, he deserves to have a week about him if he wants it, but he has no intention of doing it.
Oh,
I'd
yeah.
say Peter Manny has made up his mind at this stage, but he's just never going to. I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't announce it till the Munster season's over, for instance.
You know what? If I could just chime in here, I reckon there was just something about watching him in the anthems that kind of said to me, like, I reckon he's said something like in the changing rooms this week, or just to give. I mean, we didn't really see it in the performance, I guess, but there could have been a bit of nerviness that everyone was thinking, like, oh gosh, okay, well, Pete said, this might be his last game. He doesn't know. Or he said, this is going to be my last game, but he's going to, chat it through still. But yeah, like you say, it's not really his style to kind of come out and be like, it's my last game, everyone, and kind of the fanfare and all that. But yeah, I mean, we know he's an emotional guy, but something just seemed like maybe it was going to be, but we'll
I think
see.
we're all emotional men watching those anthems. Like I'm not even gonna try. I text Ben and I was like, I'm off. I'm already crying. I can't do this. Like, and it just felt like the quarterfinal all over again when Andrew Porter has tears streaming down his face. I'm like, I can't do this. But anyways, Adam, just on that, you were saying, they needed this, they needed it for Pete, for the squad, for the likes of the Jack Crowdies, Joe McCarthys of this team as well. I think that's the main takeaway, isn't it? Even though the performances went down, that is the main takeaway.
For a tournament with not many new caps, I think it was only Ollie Jaeger was the only new cap for us, wasn't it?
Unless you go with Six Nations caps, which I think is a lot of rubbish. Six Nations debut.
I don't get that because
Yeah.
every test match is like almost just like the same intensity anyway. It's just it's the Six Nations is a nice wee tournament that we do every year. I just think that it's also it's a big settler for the younger guys coming through. And also it's a good point now to look at this squad now and see what we can what improve on to how we can add players now into that summer squad. Because I feel like it's going to be a much sort of changed Ireland squad to what we see in terms of I don't think Omani, like as we said, he's probably retiring. Keane Healy is another one. Is he just forever going to be here?
I
They're going
think
to.
Keane is going to play for the record, to be honest. He's pretty close to Johnny at this stage. I think he'll just keep going for that for the next season, and then that's it. And hope to God that Jack Boyle, be it at maybe not Boyle, maybe with someone else, but maybe Boyle, even if it's not at Leinster, if it's at like Munster, Ulster, can get good minutes under his belt over the next season or two.
Yeah, because like I this squad needs it, but also we need to start looking at the next step because we don't have a loose head that is going to walk into the system. And like, you know what I mean? We still have Keane Healy there and he's still class and he still holds up everything. It's just that my worry is we don't have anyone, yeah, exactly, to sort of that has the experience.
Yeah, and there's a touch of that about fullback as well, because I've
Oh, yeah.
nothing against Jordan Armour. I think he's a good player. I don't know if he's international level fullback, but there was a lot of worry when Hugo Keenan went down, because it is true. It is a joke, but it is true. An injured Hugo Keenan is the second best fullback in Ireland. You know, and like there was an air of that, and it's the same maybe at open side, because I think Peter O'Mahony was Ireland's second choice open side for a long period, even though I think it'll be Doris eventually. I think James Lowe has evolved into solely a power winger. I think he's lost a touch of pace, and he is that power type now. And there's a couple of positions like that, like Henshaw and Aki are, what are they, 31 and 32 respectively, or 31 and 33 respectively. But like, that's fine. As long as the team evolves, that's the one thing I said before the tournament, evolve. Don't rest in your laurels, because you will get caught in the hop. And I think that's kind of why they got caught in the hop against England,
Oh,
because
yeah.
they went back to type a bit. But Hugh, I want to get your perspective on things, because I can't believe this is the case, but the English media are hyping a team to the nines, and it's not England, it is Ireland this time, and they do deserve some of it. So, like, just from your perspective on things, like, yes, the performance is probably downgraded game on game, but what have you made of this Irish team in the first 5 games of the 4 year cycle?
Yeah, 4 year cycle. I think it's difficult. It must be a funny psychological space to be, because you had that massive game in Paris first up, and everyone was picking France to win that one based on what we've seen previously. And as soon as Ireland won that game and put in that incredible performance, it felt like it was an open door to a second consecutive Grand Slam that had never been done before. So not only did you have supreme confidence that you were going to win the title, you had that opportunity for history and to be arguably the greatest Six Nations team of all time. And when that went wrong against England, that was kind of, it kind of puts a negative taint on something that wasn't negative. I still think you're clearly the best team in the Six Nations, and I think, we've had the South African fans getting involved in all of the tit for tat about who's the best team in the world. If only there was a way of finding out which of two teams was better. I'm sure we'll come up with something. Maybe
We
during the
might figure it
summer.
out before the summer, yeah.
So it's the word that I've used a couple of times in different places about Ireland is hubris, and I think that's harsh. I don't think it's the right word, but it is the kind of you expect to win, you know that you're better, and let's be honest about it. Vast majority of those players in that team, the Leinster players, could probably count on their fingers how many games of professional rugby they've ever lost. So it's like disappointed by not winning by enough. I remember a few years ago when the All Blacks were in their peak and they would get slated for winning by 20 points instead of 30. Like, and Ireland aren't quite there yet. But I think just, and remember last year from the Grand Slam decider, you were playing against at home against an England side that had taken 50 off France at home the week before. And he made a bit of a meal of it. And I just think there's, with Ireland, there's a, and there's no stats to back this up, there's some kind of a psychological, I don't know whether you just struggle to get up emotionally for games that you know you're going to win. Yes, of course, there was the Peter Imani thing. Well, we think there was anyway, that kind of added an edge to it. But just when you know you're going to win and you expect to win, you know, and you the history against Scotland, you know, there was nothing historic, no historical data to suggest that Scotland were going to beat you. Whether that just kind of takes an edge off it, and it's whether Ireland were sort of going through the motions for most of this Six Nations, which again just speaks to how good and the gap between yourselves and the rest. But I it'll be interesting to see if we see a continuation of that down in South Africa this summer.
I think that's a really good point because there is definitely an element with certain Irish players, and people would say it's unfair that you point towards Leinster. Some of it is on Leinster because they're expected to win the most games. But when they're expected to win the big games, that's when it comes out. And like you look at Leinster against La Rochelle last year, like definitely at halftime, Leinster were expected to win it for, you know, we can put it that way. Ireland against England, Ireland against Scotland, the All Blacks quarterfinal. And there has been a tendency of the same players being the ones that you point at. But that is where you look at Andy Farrell and you look at Paul O'Connell and you say that should be one of your main objectives for the next year or 2 years. That because there will be a dip in form. They're not going maybe I'll be wrong, they're not going to win four championships in a row. That's so unlikely. It just doesn't happen. It would be five actually if it happens. But
No one's ever won three in a row.
yeah. So it's probably, you know. Chances are a big player gets injured before the next tournament and that derails us altogether. You know, so like there's that. So I think that's something they'll have to look at. And it's very hard to do. Some of it is just maybe Farrell's whole adversity thing is probably this is where it's overblown because adversity isn't losing Hugo Keenan before the game and going down to Jordan Armour. Adversity is losing two backs within 50 minutes against England. That's what it actually is. And I think we built up this psychological toughness in this team a little bit too much off the back of last year. It's like we forget, yeah, Josh van der Veer through his lineups. Keane Healy pulverized Scotland in a couple of scrums in that game. That was huge last year. Like he made mincemeat of them. So there's probably a bit of like give and take there. And yes, the adversity thing is fun, but to your point, there's probably that something that they have to deal with and they have to learn to deal with. And I think they will. I think there's a good coach and stuff there. I think Gary Keegan is very good at his job from anyone I've spoken to. So I think they will, but we can't just talk about Ireland, unfortunately. We have to talk about the other teams as well. Jack, I might get your take on Scotland as well, and not just Scotland, but the players, because Scotland huffed and puffed, but like it did feel like it was Ireland's forwards that dragged them over the line. We mentioned Porter before we hit record. Who impressed you most in green and maybe even in the Navy of Scotland as well?
Yeah, I think it was a funny old game where everyone seemed to have their moments. Everyone seemed to have like, a good little intervention here and there on both sides. And I think that Scotland just collectively, I mean, Andy Christie was just everywhere, wasn't he? I mean, he saves a try, getting Nash before the line. Nash should probably dive in after the first little cut back, I think, in my opinion. I think they're chasing over hard and he should probably cut back in. But Christie just gets the angle perfectly and just nails him. So he was by far, I think judging by the reaction on Twitter as well, everyone was praising him for all that. Hugh Jones is again slippery. That's four tackles that he basically gets away from, which is pretty phenomenal when you think about, Ireland's defense is probably one of the best in the world. But yeah, everyone just kind of, it's a bit of a cliche, everyone kind of fronted up in that second half and just absolutely went direct. And I think that was kind of what was needed because we were trying to manipulate the Scottish defense, but it was just ready for it. So I really enjoyed the first like 5, 10 minutes, even though we didn't score. It was just direct, direct, direct. And you could see guys like Henshaw just taking it off nine. just flying into the Scottish defence. And you could see Scotland were like, okay, we haven't got the line speed again here. We can't get up in their faces because we're just playing so flat. So that was good to see. But yeah, I thought Byrne had a really good game. Furlong had a really couple of really good instances. He came off a bit early, but I mean that was pretty impressive. Again, like I think Joe was probably a bit quiet again. Joe McCarthy probably didn't have. I don't think he really kicked on massively in terms of, you know, he had a big game against France, and then, you know, games after that were maybe a little bit quieter for him. But we know he's got the potential. You should just back him. But yeah, the other one is obviously Bundy. He just turns up every day, it seems, and he, you know, he cut down numerous Scottish defenders, Doohan in particular, and Kyle Steen, where it's just the technique is just perfect. It's just the perfect tackle. And, you know, that again, you know, Scotland's defence was good, but ours is also like the best in the Six Nations for a reason. And I think Gwynna saw that in terms of just, you know, hurrying around, backing the guy next to you, and just the systems that they've got in place. It just really shows that they can miss a couple of tackles, but if you miss four, then maybe Hugh Jones is going to get into the London posts. But yeah, everyone played pretty well. There were a few weird performances in there as well. But otherwise, everyone played a pretty solid game. And just to mention on Russell as well. I mean, I think everyone thinks about the Maverick paradox. Whenever he doesn't, you know, play an absolute blinder, then he somehow has a bad game. But that wasn't the case. He just very pragmatically went around, putting Scotland in the right areas of the field. And, you know, if the last 5 minutes are any different, then, you know, Scotland might actually snatch that game.
Definitely. Who would have thought that it would be Johan van Graan who made Finn Russell into an all-around 10? Who would have seen that coming? Not the Irish rugby media, anyway, that's for sure. Before we leave off on Ireland, because I want to touch on the other games and the other teams' tournament, any last comments on Ireland and this championship or players or whatever it may be, if anyone wants to jump in?
The only... You brought up Farrell and the adversity even, and how Ireland work around bringing in Larmour at 15. Our depth is a huge issue at multiple positions. We I know we say cohesion, and it's worked very well, and we've won two Six Nations relatively handily. Leinster have made European finals, Munster have won the URC, great. But there are multiple positions across that team, front row, wing, full back, even centre to a point where we do not have test level depth. Like, it showed against England. It showed again yesterday. If we go down to South Africa and we ship injuries in Loftus, which we could very easily do, what do we do then? Like, we do not have... There's players all over the country that are quality enough, Ulster, Connacht, Munster, to get into that squad that aren't getting into camp. And I know you addressed it during the week. Well, I'm not trying to step on what you said. You're correct during the week. Get A games, get people into camp, because it's going to hurt us eventually.
Yeah, I think that's where it's Humphrey's first tour, isn't it? So hopefully...
Well, I'm sure Humphrey... Nusafora, if they win, he'll be in the photo, because that's where he is. Irish rugby Shane Ross. He is in every photo, and I hate it. But yeah, you're saying
he just is always there. But yeah. Like, I feel like it's not going to be, it's like Humphrey's first sort of test with it. However, he's not going to be in for long enough to see what we can do. I feel like when Humphrey's eventually gets to his next Six Nations, I feel like is the true test. I know that the Autumn Internationals are also there, but a true test of how he's going to try and fix these provinces to actually make them into... Oh, a couple of years ago, you would think each of the four provinces are basically four mini Ireland teams with a few non-Irish qualified players, and they can easily create a conveyor belt that would be like, oh, Ringrose is injured. Let's put in Hume, for example, a couple of years ago during that COVID sort of spell, or like Fish. I think with Humphreys is that he wants, and I think he said this as well in the media, that he wants to make it like that again. And it's sort of completely straight, like it's completely went out of it, because This is like the Six Nations, where I think there's like a few, there's only like a handful, like well, two Ulster players that were in two or three games. And like that for a Six Nations is crazy when you think about it, because you're completely missing out a province there. There's something seriously wrong when it's not the four proud provinces. And it is still the four proud
Especially when they're this
provinces.
strong. That's
Oh yeah,
the huge thing. Like
exactly.
the ecosystem is strong. It could be stronger. I meant this during the week and I won't harp on about it, but the ecosystem is strong, the provinces are strong. We could have four teams in the Euro semi-finals last year if the quarterfinal draw went differently. But yet it is the kind of where do we put the eggs in the basket? For Nusafora and for Farrell, it's the green machine of the cohesive, the slick team. Maybe Humphreys' agenda would be let's get more players in there and let's, play, even if it's Ireland Barbarians teams and we have to select the most random players, like, I don't know, like Dave Ewers and Alex Ankervell, just for a bit of experience. It's something. It's better than Emerging Ireland Tour taking on AIL standard teams.
I think what David Humphreys did, like, I know it's like a bit out of the way, but he was like the performance director at England Cricket, and he started picking random, like not random, but good enough young players to come in and like sort of throw them in at the deep end and just see if they floated. And most of it worked. He introduced like a new sort of idea and thinking towards it, and it seems to like I know it's in the cricket, but it seems to like actually be solidifying, like sort of a regime there, and sort of like how they think and how like they say Bazball. We need something like that, but in rugby for the provinces almost. We need that sort of shake up. We need that weird cohesion where we don't all play the same rugby. I'm not saying that we're all going to be like broken up, all play the same rugby, but how you can easily fit Ulster's game plan, which at the minute you can with the Ireland game plan, and that's why Leinster fit in so well, because it's so close to it.
Well, statistically and stylistically, the evolution of Ireland from what we've seen in rounds 1 to 3 is more akin to what Munster did.
Oh yeah, well
And
yeah, actually yeah, to be
there's that
fair,
side of it as well. Now, granted, the performances dropped off and they kind of went back to style. I'm not saying, but like that is kind of what they're hinting at. Funnily enough, Mike Prendergast was not considered for the back coach job, but I'm delighted about that on a selfish reason as well, because I think he's a
Can I just
phenomenal club
quickly
coach.
jump in on the Bazball thing? As long as we're
Do.
not planning any three test tours to India, then yeah, then I'm all for the Bazball. But it didn't end up too well there. So if
No, it
we
didn't. No,
I have no idea about cricket, but
it's very true. It's very true. But
I'll
I was just sort of hoping that like just some entertaining rugby for like two or three games. Maybe it will sink. Then we'll see what happens. I don't know.
let you
And
up.
I
Lads, we're doing
think
all right as it is, so
the funny thing is, like, people go on about, well, you can't start losing games. Like, no, you can't start losing games. But at the same time, the only considerable detriment to losing games in this World Cup cycle with the change pools is money. And you cannot tell me the Aviva won't sell out 90% of the time anyways. Like, we've got four November tests coming up. Okay, two of them are on Friday nights, and that might be for a different day's conversation. But they're going to sell. They're just going to sell. Like, we could lose to New Zealand, lose to Argentina. The Fiji game won't be a great seller anyway, and the Australia game still will. That'll still get probably the best attendance in terms of demand from across the 32 counties of Ireland and the many expats who come over. So I don't really, there's that side of it. Now, obviously, prize money in the Six Nations is stark, and I know Thomas Roberts's penalty at the end cost England something like 750,000, but that's just the mad side of rugby in some regard. But I do want to touch on that game because we'll get back to Ireland, the
Can I
Ireland
just say,
friendlies.
as an
Go on, yeah.
outsider, that whole discourse was weird. Like,
Which one?
seeing when you're winning, guys. Like, take it from a Welsh
Well,
fan, enjoy the good times.
there's that too. But you see, the problem is here, we brought our two Munster fans, the two Ulster fans, to talk about David Nusafora. And I don't know about Adam and Jack because I don't speak to you frequently, but between Ulster's financial troubles, Munster winning the URC and having barely any players in the squad, and the fact that the Ireland women's game has gone down the toilet, so far down the toilet that it is lost forever. I don't think you're going to see too much
Chelsea
praise for David
Challenge
Nusafora.
champions, mate. Wolfhounds.
Yeah, but who won
Oh,
that? Who won the Celtic Challenge?
look, it was
The
technically Ulster. Let's go.
Oh, damn it, Dan McFarlane's going to take credit for that, isn't he? Anyways, we'll move on. We'll move on. We'll move to Lyon, to France and England in, I think we can say, the best game of the tournament. And it probably, this was always going to happen, wasn't it? The tournament we won by Ireland, and then these two sides just go out there and just say, fuck it. They just play the most shoe way would be possible. Adam, I'm going to come to you for this one.
I
want to keep it straight, but like, what a game.
Yeah, I absolutely loved it. It's nice seeing a game where it doesn't directly affect us because you've already won the thing, and it just makes you sit down and just be like, oh, I can actually enjoy this. And it was just end-to-end stuff. I'm really impressed with the new nine for France, Le Garrick. He's way better than Lukaku. This is when I absolutely butcher a bunch of French names. It's coming up to that time of the podcast. But I'm doing it on Duolingo, so... but I'm really interested in like the England setup at the minute. It's looking nice. I'm really impressed by Furbank. I know he came off injured, and I think Smith slotted in so well to that fullback position. It was just so good. It was like defense was out the window. And at one point towards the end, it looked like just penalties after penalties, and Thomas Ramos is up there with probably one of the 10s of the tournament. I know he didn't play 10 for most of it, but the way he was playing in that 10 position when he got to, he's just, he makes it look effortless. I think he's sort of that backup 10 that France need when Ntamack eventually comes back into the fold. And when Jalibert also comes back as well, because of course they're...
And Toulouse will be relying on him for most of the season as well.
Oh yeah, yeah. Like, I think it's very interesting how Ramos has become, well, yeah, Toulouse have got a bunch of fullbacks now. They've got like a ton of fullbacks, so that Ramos has to naturally fit into that 10 position, and he's thriving in it. I don't think he put really a foot wrong. I know he missed a penalty, which at the minute, I think he missed, how many penalties did he miss this Six Nations? There was a few at the start,
yeah,
for the Ireland match. He missed a few, but like, he's only human, but he's just class. And Olivon and Audrey, they've just left everything. I think the forwards played a massive part. It was an absolute battle. I think it was one of, up there with a classic England-France game.
Yeah.
And I think the beauty of the Six Nations was certainly shown, because they were playing for a position on the, and I know it's for money, but they were playing for a position on the in the table. But they just saw it as, this is a test. This is test rugby. We're going to have to play this. And they just absolutely went for it, and I was impressed by both teams. I'm slightly worried by the return of England's form, and they're starting to build quite a unit, and I think Felix Jones is settling in, so it'd be interesting to see. And I think you mentioned, Keelan, yesterday that they're playing a tour in
New Zealand,
and that's going to be really, really good, because you have two teams there that should be up there, should be performing. I bet that the last two World Cups, and I know that England got to finals and stuff, but, you know, I think that they're always sort of underperforming when you really look into it. I'm excited for it. I'm excited. It's weird to say that I'm excited for an England team, because I don't really see anybody that I don't particularly... It's really weird for me, because I mentioned this yesterday in the pub to a couple of English people that were sitting next to me. It's really weird, because I'm like, some of them are quite likable, like George Ford. I'm just like, I don't know why. I'm like, why am I feeling this? Like, what's going on here? Like, if there's nothing, like, I think there's like a lack of Saracens there.
There's the begrudging respect then for the likes of the Ben Earls as well, where it's like, I can't, like, Jamie George is Mr. Anti-Saracens in that regard. Like, he's such a genuine character. You can just love him. All the other Saracens lads, and a couple of like Quinns lads as well. It's like, I can't stand you, but you're a pretty good rugby player when you want to. And I think this game proved as well that I think Steve Borthwick might need to alter his plans. Maybe move Freddie Stewart to the wing as a power winger who can kick chase and kick chase. And maybe go with the second playmaker at fullback, because it seems to work. Furbank looked like a big loss. Then Smith comes in and plays unreal after Furbank played class last week. And to be fair, Furbank was all right against Scotland, apart from the pass that he headed into the arms of Duane van der Merwe.
Yeah, I think I'm impressed with Fairbank, but I do agree. I think a second playmaker is the way to go. And I think Smith naturally taking on a fullback jersey, I think he's quick enough, he's smart enough for it, and his awareness of the pitch when he's in fullback, it just seems to fit well.
It's just his tackling is technically very poor. That's the only real issue there. And it's funny, like you mentioned that series. If there's one time you don't want to play England, it's when they're full of confidence. If there's one time you don't want to play New Zealand, it's when they're being written off. And I feel like that's what's going to happen. And yeah, will I get up at 8:30 in the morning to watch it? Yes. Will I put it on mute if BT end up getting the rights, which they might be? Yes. Anyways, we'll move on because Wales against Italy was on as well. And Hugh kindly agreed to join us weeks ago knowing this could happen. But Hugh, I'll put it to you first on Wales. We might get a bit on Italy as well. Warren Gatland's men, like, they were outclassed. It's a wooden spoon. And like, I know you were positive about the rebuild and whatever, but not even the naivety of youth could keep the air in this particular balloon, it felt like. And it did kind of come crashing down a small bit yesterday.
Yeah. It's the first time really that I've looked at Gatland and gone, you need to change. I don't want him out. I still think he's the right person to be leading this rebuild, but I think he needs to change, particularly in attack. Three of our five opponents in the Six Nations have gone with a 6-2 split. And the reason that works so well against Wales is because Gatland's attacking strategy is all about being fitter than the other team and wearing them out and then grinding them down as the game goes on. A, we don't have the athletes to do that anymore. And B, just do a 6-2 split. And then that completely negates that. You bring on your forwards. You could see that Ireland did it and Italy did it. Just bring them on tactically, just at the right time. France did it as well, I suppose. And it just keeps them fresh, and then we don't wear them down, and that's that. Any semblance of attack is gone. The forward, if it's just speaking about this Italy game specifically, the forward performance was just terrible. According to Robbie Bass, whose stats are a bit iffy sometimes, it was the starting pack combined got 60 meters from 69 carries. Like, just no go forward as well. And, you know, Sam Costello's getting a lot of stick at the moment because he's the 10 in the Welsh jersey. And yes, you know, his kicking from hand wasn't great, but he's basically just getting the ball off a forward pack that's going backwards. And they're just going, all right, Sam, you're 23. You've had a couple of caps. Sort this out, will you? And, you know, he's playing in an extremely poor Scarlets team, which I'm sure Caelan will talk about another day. Getting God knows what kind of coaching, and it's difficult to take any positives at all from that Wales campaign as a total. You know, Wales's attack under Warren Gatland has always been bad. Even when we were winning Grand Slams, we were winning Grand Slams with like record fewest tries scored. Like, so it's always been poor, but the times when our attackers look good, well, look the best, was the second half against Scotland and the last 15 minutes against Italy, which is when we were two scores down, had no chance of winning, and it was sod the plan, lads, let's just duet. And you know, it works a bit, but the game was already lost, so it doesn't really matter. I'm trying to think of positives. You know, I think Daft Jenkins has done himself proud all tournament.
Is he? I'm going to go bold here because I'm maybe having to write about this during the week as much as I don't like Lions content. Is he a nailed-on starter for the Lions as of today?
No, like not, not a nailed-on starter, no.
I would. He's 2 years younger than McCarthy, and he's playing better.
He's good. I can see him going on a Lions tour. I don't think he's a nailed-on starter, but that's purely because of the other options that are available. I still am of the opinion that Will Rowlands is a better player than Daft Jenkins. They're different players. But Daft Jenkins has got the leadership, he's got the availability, which Will Rowlands doesn't have being a Racing player. It's just the building for the future thing that Gatland threw in there. Look, Daft Jenkins has been fantastic all tournaments. I still think if you're picking on ability as a player and you're picking on the combination with Adam Beard, who seems to be immune from drop, which is understandable. I think Will Rowlands is still a better player than Daft Jenkins, but I think Daft Jenkins has let absolutely nobody down. Aaron Wainwright has also been excellent all tournament, as has been Rio Dyer, the two Dragons players, weirdly. just going backwards all the time, inability to play with territory. And going back to the attack again, there's no detail in our attack. And this is the same for every single Welsh team. At any of the four regions, the under 20s and the men's seniors, there's no detail in the attack. It's you have the ball and you watch. You know, I was watching Chiefs against, I forget who it was. I think it was Drua on Saturday morning. And just as an example, these Kiwi players, their agility before contact and when they go into contact, they are not the biggest players, particularly some of their backs and wingers. But they're making meters upon meters in contact. And that's because they have the footwork, they target the soft shoulders, they have the agility, they have the desire and the powering through. You watch Welsh players carry. They put their head down, they bend double, they put their head down, they run straight to the person in front of them, and then they hit the deck. There's no post-contact fight. And
that was George North's biggest weakness when he was about 24, 25, 26. He just put the head down and ran through you. And eventually, I think he kind of just, be a true coach and whatever, was like, yeah, this doesn't work. I don't care. I'm just going to stop doing this. I don't care what the coaches say. And like, I remember it being something being talked about on BBC and RT and whoever, actual coaches being like, no, you can't. Like, whatever coach has sent him to do this, he can't do that anymore.
Well, that's the question, is what messages are they getting from the coaches? Because it's the same issues all the time. I mean, if you look at percentage dominant carries, Wales are second bottom, 23%. If you look at percentage gain like success, Wales are fully bottom, 40%. You know, all of our tackle stats, all of our carrying stats, sorry, I should say, are horrendous. Tackle evasion, 15.9%, bottom as well. So we're not powering over the gain line, but we're also not avoiding tackles. Yeah. So it's just running at brick walls constantly, and we don't have the ball carriers to do it. Again, another thing that you normally back Gatland to the hilt on, but he seems to be getting wrong at the moment, is selection. If you look at what our weaknesses are, there are players in the team that who can solve that. But he's not picking them, or at least not starting them. You know, players like Will Rowlands is probably our best ball carrying forwards. We can talk about George North. You know, maybe another day we'll reflect on his incredible career, and lots of people will be, and it's fantastic to see how much love he's been getting on socials and things in the week. I think the person who'll be most gutted about George North's retirement is Nick Tompkins, because I think the only thing that was keeping Nick Tompkins in the team was his partnership with George North and his cohesion with him, being the only centre partnership from the Wayne Pivac area to still be around today. And now that George North is gone, and Tompkins had a really bad game against Italy, and I just can't see any reason for keeping him in the team, especially with the kind of 12 that Costello needs. I just think Tompkins isn't that guy. So, yeah, sitting here today, wooden spoon, it's not all lost. It's not all, you know, hit the cancel button and start again. But it's worse than we probably thought it was going to be, all told.
Yeah, that certainly seems to make sense. And even coming into it, you knew those guys like, say, Dowie Lake, Jack Morgan, Chris Jones, you knew these guys were going to be absent. But, like, to their credit, for instance, Tommy Rappel had a fantastic tournament. Alex Mann did pretty well. Like, in relative terms, Alex Mann had a pretty good tournament. So these weren't the major issue, but there's still that sense of deflation. But I might just get your thoughts on Italy, because we'll give you something positive to talk about. Italy have been the sunshine in a gloomy couple of weeks for, you know, pretty much every team has gone through it now at this stage. Having watched them yesterday against Wales, where they were actually the dominant team, it was remarkable to see compared to, say, 3 years ago or the Franco Smith era. What have you made of their tournament?
Excellent. Arguably the team of the tournament in terms of improvement to last year, particularly to the World Cup. You know, that World Cup, I think they said it on comms during the game, like that World Cup campaign that they had now just looks ridiculous. Like, how did that even happen? So that's a big shout out to Caseda. He's definitely got selection right. And even though maybe his constant shopping at changing at nine might need to settle down going forward, but that's really nitpicking. I could also say I don't think RBC's had a great tournament. That might be a hot take, but we'll talk about that a bit later. The picking off the Benetton core, you know, I did a stat on Twitter the other day about the winningness of the Welsh team versus the Italian team, and the Italian players win more than the Welsh players these days. And I think, you know, that was a mostly Benetton team. Seven out of the eight pack in that game was the Benetton pack. Would Benetton beat Wales? You know, that's kind of where we are now. And it's the cool thing about it is it's been, you could have seen it coming, which is makes it as it may has made it enjoyable when it has happened. Because the under 20s for Italy have been going well for a few years now. Benetton are now one of the most exciting teams in the URC, if not in terms of style and play, but in terms of where they're going and being on an upward trajectory. And they've got these players coming through. Like Russ Petty posted that the average age of Wales and Italy in that game was the same, 24. So that shows how much of a head start Italy have got on Wales. And, you know, the midfield, you know, Brex has come in for a bit of stick, including for myself in past seasons, has really turned that around. Meninscello, incredible, fantastic player. Almost no weaknesses in his game. And then the pack, that Benetton pack has been doing the business, hasn't, apart from the Ireland game, haven't really been put under too much pressure by anybody. And then you got these fantastic wingers as well, with Lainer coming in. Montayurani's been doing fantastically well. And now at fullback, you know, when Capuzzo was out, a lot of people who don't follow the URC that much were like, oh, that's a big loss. And then I'm just like, here's Pani's stats. They're really good. He's a really good player. And so it proved.
It's
So.
such a good open field runner as it transpired. Like we knew this, we knew of the Zebra back three and himself and Gacy in particular. Like give them a yard of space and they'll cut you open. And that's exactly what happened to
Ironically,
Wales.
yeah, his finishing isn't actually his big point of difference. His try assists are up there with the best, if not the best, in the URC as a fullback. And his kick meters as well, his kicking game is clearly ahead of the other options at fullback for
Kicked
me.
really well yesterday,
So,
especially kick for touch.
yeah, fullback seems to have been a thing that Italy have been struggling with. They've moved Tommy Allen back there a few times and they were trying to solve that riddle. I think they might have solved that now. But you can tell they're really well coached as well. And just, I'm singing their praises because they deserve it. And what I think impressed me about the Wales game is I think Italy, maybe even 2 weeks ago, would have been a bit jittery going into that and thinking, oh, we need to win this. We're supposed to win it. Then overthink it, overplay it, overcomplicate it in their own heads. This, it was just cool. Let's rock up. Let's just do our thing. Almost like I said with Ireland, just go through the motions and we'll win this one. And they did. And I think the scoreline massively flatters Wales in the end. Italy clearly had. And it's crazy because 7, 8 years ago, Wales were putting 80 points on Italy at home. And now, last two games at home in Cardiff against Italy, we've lost. And I think it's a fair reflection that they're ahead of Wales in terms of being a rugby nation at the moment. And it's exciting for them. And I hope that they continue to sell out their stadium in Rome as well. And I hope they get a European final one of these days, maybe.
Which you go away. No, I do agree. And you mentioned like the confidence and that forcing things. That first try that Ioane scored was the epitome. They just went through the motions when they had to just truck it up for a couple of phases. Rutsa, Kanone, Negri did that. And like Brex, Ignacio Brex, as you said, has been under quite a bit of criticism in recent years. He's not the quickest 13. There's one thing he does better than most, it's that little pullback pass. And he did it for both of the tries superbly. No luck. Pullback pass and executed. And
Some
yeah,
of his
oh,
defensive reads were fantastic as well.
yeah.
Just
He
something.
was always a pretty solid defender. It was just pace
Yeah.
on the outside he used to get caught on, but that was,
I
yeah.
think Wales' attack is easier to read than the very hungry caterpillar at the moment, to be
Yes.
honest.
Yeah. Agreed. But you know, he still got to nail his man, and he did that. He did that pretty well. But yeah, there's little deception in that Welsh attack.
And we'll stick with the Rising Stars because despite a 36-0 bonus point win in Cork, Ireland under 20s do not make it three in a row. Unfortunately, tries never pay. Player of the match and arguably player of the tournament, Evan O'Connell, Sean O'Dogba, Hugo McLaughlin, and two more for Danny Sheehan. Still not enough. Ben, we won't go into too much detail on this one. I'll get Jack's take on it as well. Just over the course of the five games, what players have impressed you from the Ireland under 20s?
You said it, but Evan O'Connell had a absolutely tremendous tournament. I think Munster are going to try and get him in a bit more next year, get him into some URC games. His ceiling looks huge at the minute. Sean O'Dogbo, him and Edwin, the two of them are going to be stars. You could see some of the carries he did, particularly in the England game last week. No, not the England game, the game 2 weeks ago. Against Wales, he did very well. And again on Friday night, he was just barreling through Scottish men. It was tremendous.
Just doesn't take a backward step either. Like, no, even if he's not driving players back, he's not going backwards.
He has a hint of that CJ Stander about him. Does just take the ball. I don't care who's in front of me. I am taking them 5 meters that way. Don't care. Small hat tip to Hopes. I thought he was terrific when he came in. Really, really quality player. Like to see a bit more of him. Again, I would hope Ulster bring him in a bit next year for URC games. He is like the last.
This is second year, isn't it? Am I right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So he'd be like, I like that. But when lads get 2 years at it, usually their body progresses better as well. So hopefully he'd be closer there, thereabouts.
I know I complained about depth earlier, but certainly in the pack, the power and the talent we have coming through at that level across all four provinces.
And at hooker wonderful. Again.
And that a hooker was as well, big one. Which is necessary.
Yeah, that's true. And I'm trying to think, there's someone else I feel like we're forgetting. I thought the back row, actually. The back row of, obviously, Odogbo started, but also Luke Murphy and... Oh, I can't think of the, Bryn Ward, thank you. I was going to say Boyd.
I was going to bring him up. You know, good
yeah. I'll let you go on that one because I thought they were fantastic. And is there anyone else that stood out to you?
Yeah, I mean it was funny. It's kind of like an absolute kind of just ocean of riches. It seems with the back row. It started off with Hopes, Ward, and Gleeson. You just thought, oh, geez, they you know beat this French team, and they just thought, oh wow, if they can keep all those guys fit, then you know that'll be fantastic. And then you know during the course of the tournament, you had you know like you say. Luke Murphy, is it? He came in at 8. You know, Gleeson was injured for pretty much most of the tournament. Did he just play the France game and then
just the French game got injured he was spotted in a moon boot on Friday night.
Yeah, right, there you go. And then well, you're used to injury updates like that, so it's all right. Yeah, and then you know, switching around the pack so much, you know, Hopes going into the second row, and then bringing in a Dogbo, and then you know, just shifting things around. Bryn Ward was just phenomenal in like every game. He's just that type of player who just wants to carry. He might go backwards a couple of times, but he's just there in the next phase, wanting to go forward again. So that was amazing. I think if Gleeson stays fit for that tournament, I think it changes the complexion slightly of Ireland's season. I think he's just an absolute animal.
I think they beat England with Gleeson. I'm not like he's only 19 years of age. I'm not going to put too much pressure, but I think they went with Spicer for power, and he was outfought. I think if you go Hopes at four, you put Gleeson in at eight, and put Murphy or Ward to six. I think you probably just have enough to get that job done.
But look, like. I was going to mention it earlier, but actually it's a good, with the 20s, it's a good kind of metric of how the cycles work. And I think, you know, you see that in the top game as well. You know, England will go through a cycle of, you know, being a bit crap for a bit, and then they'll just get an array of talent coming through, and, you know, they'll wax lyrical about, you know, Pollock and stuff like that. But they will genuinely, like, England will never be that far away. You know, they'll always be thereabouts, and they'll always be close. They might have a stinker 1 year, but they'll come back the next year, and they'll probably have a really good system in place. And you know, fair play to them. They go down and absolutely wallop France in the second half. A couple of other guys to mention, though. I would say, you know, future Ulster fly half Jack Murphy. It will probably be coming up to the Northern Province very soon. We don't have any tens, so be helpful. Hugh Gavin.
They'll take another Bray lad with them as well, because that's what Richie Murphy likes to do as well.
We'll take whoever we can get our hands on. Yeah. Hugh Gavin in the centre, phenomenal. Just again carries, but also lovely soft hands as well. I think Finn Tracy as well is another one who looked really, really tasty. Just, you know, route one pace, bags of it.
Hunter
really.
Clark had a good tournament as well at centre. Yeah, I thought he was a very good defender in particular. And Ben O'Connor looks raw.
Ben O'Connor.
You can't teach the physicality side of things, and he has that in abundance.
He's got a massive boot, and he's a big lad, so like fullback is kind of made for him. So, yeah, not a good one there. But But yeah, there's plenty of great lads. But those Odogbo boys are going to be some fun to watch. I have to say, that's going to be, oh, you're going to be a pain in like a couple of years. It's going to be horrendous.
We already are. Don't worry about that.
Like, we have a potential in Green of McCarthy and Odogbo at lock. Just, oh, the amount of power in, even give it 4 years, that we, like, they say Springboks, fine. Give me those two at 4 and 5.
No. The one that I'm a bit disappointed in, he hasn't kicked on, is Achukwu at Ulster, because I just thought he would be that type of, I thought he'd be the par second row. He's one guy who I hope will get more minutes and just play more, because that's what he needs. But he's a guy for me who, you know, he's played sevens, he's been around the circuit, like he knows how to go about himself, but just hasn't had the opportunity. I really hope he can kind of push on, because he was on that Emerging Ireland tour as well, and you know, we saw how many guys got capped after that tour. But he's had an injury, and I don't know if he's still carrying something, but he's one that I really want to see more of in Ulster at least.
And I feel like that's the power lock in particular is not something you can teach. You need to have a certain mindset. You need to have a certain frame. You need to be durable. You need to have a very smart brain about it. And I think if there's one thing that I think Odogbo has over McCarthy is Odogbo uses power probably more wisely. He doesn't just burst into everything and give away a couple of penalties. Like Odogbo's ruck stats, he's like 15% better than McCarthy at ruck effectiveness, for instance. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's a huge uptick there, and that's one of the patterns. And like, what's great to see as well, and people say this is unfair, this was a team who was laid the foundations with players outside of Leinster, which hasn't been the case for years. It's been the Leinster lads who were most pro ready, who kind of helps everyone else and brings them up to standard. This time it was Evan O'Connell, Joe Hopes, Bryn Ward, fair enough, Murphy at 10 in particular, Hugh Gavin, you know, Ben O'Connor, Finn Tracy, like, not necessarily backed by the Leinster lads. It wasn't the O'Tiernigs and the Culhanes of even just 2 years ago. It was very different. I think that's fantastic to see, and it speaks to what the likes of Ian Costello is doing at Munster, for instance, with the academy and the sub-academies and the national talent squads, and bringing these lads up to scratch. And like, Evan O'Connell looked like a lad who has been in pro setups. You know, some guys just look that way, and he's one of them now. He probably has looked like he's been in a pro setup since he was about 10, but that's my virtue of having the best second row in the world, arguably, helping him out throughout the ranks. But and then if you want to get excited, you look at like some of the Schools Cup finals that took place this week. I know the Leinster one is today. These are some cracking games. The Prez Christians game was unreal. Marist against Grammar and Connacht, that was very, very good as well. So there's talent there. And maybe this time next year we'll be talking about Dean O'Leary Kareem, for instance, who I know Munster fans are very excited to see. But we'll move on to the more fun side of things, as if it hasn't been fun so far. So it's all fun on this Saturday morning. But I wanted to start with a team of the tournament. Now, because there isn't 5 of you, this will become a little bit more difficult, I won't lie, or even 3. So front row, Ben, I'll go to you first, because I like Adam's suggestion. I'll come to him afterwards. I'll go to you first. What was your front row for the team of the tournament?
I was on the train last night. I was racking my brain when you sent this over, being like, how can I make this not just Ireland players primarily? look, I think you have to go on reporter. He's nailed down number one. I don't think there's any real debate over that. Had to be Genge, but again, has to be Porter. He was just incredible. Hooker, I said just before we recorded, Ronan Kelleher. Thought he had a wonderful tournament when he came in. Yes, Sheehan is very good. Sheehan is a try-scoring machine. We all know this. They said that before he was announced yesterday in the Aviva. He is a wonderful player. His throwing, for me, isn't where it needs to be, and Kelleher is a better line-out operator. I would value that myself. I'd have Kelleher over him. Tree was tough. You have Tyke Furlong. He's Tyke Furlong. He's arguably should have got World Player of the Year 2 years ago. He's one of the best players on the planet. You've Antonio, you've Ferguson, you've Cole. I went Antonio purely because his scrummaging in this tournament was terrific. I know in the loose he wasn't great. His carrying is never great. But in a tournament where the front row was so important, you had England coming in, decimated Ireland. You had the Irish front row who did very well against France. Italy have sorted out their pack and have balanced it out with Mancello, Capuzzo, I know. But I went Antonio because I think that gives you a more balanced front row as well. You have Porter Kelleher and him scrummaging on the outside.
Adam, I'll come to you because I think you have the best suggestion for the front row of the tournament. So hit me with it.
Yeah, so my number one's gonna be Antonio. No, Antonio, Andrew Porter. Andrew Porter. Sorry, I messed it up already. It's gonna be Andrew Porter, right? And then we're gonna put Peter O'Mahony's arm, and then Andrew Porter's elbow. Just the whole holding up of it, just how well that was, and how that was key to Ireland's success, according to some people, was just look at how well he's doing that. Is he allowed to do that? Are you sure he's allowed to do that? Is he allowed to support him? Is he allowed? Is a back row not allowed to support his prop? But in all seriousness, I put Porter one. I think I'm going quite similar with Ben here because I picked Antonio at tight head as well because it is it no it's the scrummaging it is it's the scrummaging he I think the scrum has been so important this year, and also there's been so many good scrums the Six Nations, but I think with Antonio is that he can put on a motor for a good he doesn't really do, as we all said, he doesn't really do much in the loose, but he can stay there. And he can just scrummage all day. He's got sort of like that, I would say, Georgian ability to scrum and Georgian love for scrummaging. He just absolutely loves a scrum, and he like, that's his meat and potatoes. But for hooker, I would go with I would go with Sheenan. I do like Kelleher, but Sheenan in the loose is I think
Up high score,
really.
five tries.
Yeah, exactly. And I think yesterday's try was taken so nicely. It
Was
was
so
just
funny.
it was so slick though. It was funny but slick at the same time. Just so he catch and dive.
We completely missed it yesterday. We looked down the pitch, it was like, how have Ireland got over the line? It was
Yeah, that was sort of like when I was watching Wales yesterday, and I was just kind of thinking like, man, they're getting so close to the line. They're getting so close to the line, and then something happens, and I'm like, "How the hell have Italy Caterpillar rocked this and somehow kicked it along and still got the ball?" But yeah, I think Sheenan. I really like a hooker that can play well in the loose. I think this year. I think when we talk about depth, I think with hooker, I think Ireland's it's probably Ireland's biggest depth pool. In terms of across the provinces, because Herring wasn't there, but you've got loads of up and comers like Tom Stewart, for example, could crack on. Hopefully, you'll get on the summer tour. I think Sheenan and Kelleher, battling for that team of the tournament spot is the best way to go. But I'll pick Sheenan.
I say Sheehan and mine. So if we're going to go
Yeah.
tiebreaker, might as
Yeah.
well go with that. Hugh, I have you doing the second row. I know you weren't as high on Daffy Jenkins a couple of minutes ago, but is it Daffy Jenkins? Is it Tadhg Byrne who's in there? Is it Itoje? Which way have you got?
Tadhg Byrne absolutely nailed on. If you look at his stats for any game, they're ridiculous. It's a joke. It's unfair. Like
Didn't miss a tackle in his first three games.
any stats, whether it's typical second row stats of like jumping up in the air and catching the ball in a line out yards and things, but he can do so much more. He is phenomenal. If he was a Kiwi, he'd be in the All Blacks team. Would he be in the Springboks team? I think he would, but we'll clip that up and put that out to South African Twitter and see what they say about that. Absolutely nailed on, and nailed on starter for the Lions in 2 years as well. Should have been nailed on 2 years ago, but anyway, that's time gone past. The other one's interesting. And there's a few contenders. I think Mara Itoje has been reinvented with this Felix Jones defensive system, and I think it's the best I've seen him play for a while, especially when he takes his scrum cap off. That always helps. Other contenders, I think Scott Cummings for Scotland has been really underrated. I think he's been excellent all tournament. He has been pretty much faultless. He's done everything that you would want a second row to do. It's almost been like a get out of jail for Scotland. Just give it to Scott. He'll do something incredibly competent, and then Finn can kick it and we'll exit from here. I think Daff Jenkins definitely deserves a shout, being one of the few shining lights for Wales. Definitely shown what a captain should do. Rusa for Italy had a particularly good game yesterday. I'm just going through the stats for that now. He was everywhere for them.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think, any kind of French nominees? Not really. I don't think any.
I thought Gabriel Lag was actually decent in the first few games, but obviously got dropped then.
He was always...
Maybe Flamand, but
he always
even
felt
that
like a bit of a weird fit. You know, but he was the only Stade Francais player in the team, and it just...
I didn't get that. You know, that inclusion, it just seemed to throw a guy in and just quickly on Rutsa, by the way, I'm just looking through some stats of the lineouts as well. You know, Tig Burns up there for three lineout steals along with Ollie Chesham, but Frederico Rutsa, he got 33 lineout takes across the tournament. The next best is Adam Beard and Aaron Wainwright with 19. Like 14 more than the next two players. Like,
Talk about your primary target. Like,
yeah,
how tall is he? I'm just checking.
He's 6'6", I think 6'7".
Yeah. I thought, especially the Scotland game, I thought the end of that game himself
6'6".
And Canone, Lorenzo Canone, that was, I thought they were everywhere in that final passage, as well as the Michele Gamero. I will probably come out to background in a minute, he'd probably get a mention at least. Like, that's what Italy, that's what we've been asking of Italy for years, even since. We were all much, much younger. It was Bergamasco and Parise and Castro Giovanni and Giraldini or whatever his name was. I can't remember. Like, those lads would stand up and everyone has to be quiet. Whereas now it's like the full eight and you can see the balance, which is great. But Hugh, if you're going to nail it down, it's Tig Burns.
Well,
+2.
I think, you know, there's unlikely to be any other Welsh players in this. So I'm going to go for Taff Jenkins alongside Tig Burns.
That's fair. You get a shout on back three as well. So you could make it 2. You have the chance to do the funniest thing possible. We could have a chance where it's one England and one Wales, and you could go with 2 Wales at the end. Jack, you're on back row duty, and dare I say, I don't want to overrule you, but I feel like this is Ben Earl, Caelan Doris +1 or +1 of them +2.
You're absolutely bang on with Ben Earl. I can't even I can't begin this segment.
I thought he was a centre.
Yeah, well, you know, he came through the academy as a centre, but then you know, Eddie Jones thought that he should be an 8, so he moved to 8. But as the tournament's gone on, I think you look at the last couple of rounds a little bit in a different lens than the first sort of game. I think Doris started really well. Actually, for me, I don't have him as in my team of the tournament, just because he was so solid and he was so great, and I know that he does so much, but I think there was a couple of occasions, maybe, you know, the England game and maybe the Scotland game, where just things were a bit quiet, but they were quiet across the whole team, so it's hard to kind of judge one player on that. But just for variety's sake, you know, definitely Ben Earl at 8, and then for me, I think in terms of players who just, you know, played pretty much every game and play their absolute hearts out, I think Michele Lamaro, you know, he made 103 tackles over the course of the tournament, and the next best is David Jenkins with 79. So 24 more than the next best, and everyone else is 78, 73, 72. So everyone's honeypotting around the high, sort of high to low 70s, and Michele Lamaro's 103. Ridiculous. And I think the other guy who needs I stick him in the team as well is Tommy Reffel. I think he's just been so consistent for Wales. He's the top breakdown stealer with 8. The next best is Sam Underhill with 4. He's just everywhere. Tommy Reffel just never gives you anything less than like 7 out of 10. And for me, you know, across the tournament, you know, he's got to be in there at least a namesake, because he's just been so consistent. And for me, Doris has just been a wee bit quieter. But then again, I am judging him on like past performances, which is potentially a bit harsh, because he's probably head and shoulders above most dates.
Is that a high chance that Reffel might lose his place when Jack Morgan's back fit as well?
Very high chance, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. The funny one about Doris is he led Ireland in tackles, in attacking ruck entries, I think defensive ruck entries, and in carries. But again, the stick that we'll be used to beat him with for probably another couple of years is he was poor against England, and he was poor in the World Cup quarterfinal, and he was poor in the European quarterfinal. And eventually he will figure it out, but because he's too good. Like, there's no way he doesn't figure that out. You can just like spend a week with Peter O'Mahony and he'll tell you how to get over this mid-career kind of lull where you play well in certain games and not others. But yeah, and to be fair, I think if Peter O'Mahony played like he did yesterday across the tournament, he'd be nailed on. He was fantastic yesterday. And like statistically, he was brilliant.
Yeah, for Doris, I just think that he gets so much of the attention from opposition defenses that it's like you have to stop him. His footwork's too good. He's too powerful. His hands are too good. So he just gets absolutely nailed. So you need no disrespect to the likes of Pete or Van der Flier, but you need a Ryan Baird or you need a Jack Conan who can take on more of the carrying, or Joe McCarthy. And that's why I think Joe McCarthy's not in the team of the tournament either, is because if you have multiple different options, ball carriers who are gonna, who are gonna take the load off Doris, stick Doris in the midfield, have him as an option there, more than just, off these 22 receipts and, goal line dropouts. You need to have a little bit of a balance. And I think that's where the game's going. I think you're just gonna you need big carriers again. But you also need, good hands to get, get
about
get
roles off. More than ever. Like the whole back row paint by numbers gone. It's roles. It's what do you want from your different players? Like, yeah. I think Ireland, naturally, they're going to go towards heavier second rows. They'll probably move with Baird and Ahern as their two main sixes. Probably Doris at seven and a big chunky eight, be it Coombs, Gleeson, whoever that might be. Even Culhane is a big number eight at Leinster. Whoever that might be, I think that's their natural evolution, to be honest. And that's kind of the way you kind of have to go. You mentioned, I actually think Jack Owen had a very good tournament. I think two subs, Ireland 6-2 for me did not really work. The two that did was Keller and Conan. Because Conan and Keller will get you gain line every time. And that's a huge asset to have. Adam, halfback is for you. I personally went with Gibson Park and Crowley, but that's because I'm Irish, and if I put something up on Twitter, I have every right to be biased. It is literally what I defend the whole time. But you could have just as easily gone Le Garrick and Russell, and I couldn't argue with you which way you're going to go.
This is difficult because I don't want to seem biased, but also, but also I'm looking at the stats, and because like I'm looking at all these stats, and I'm looking at even like for try assists and passes, Gibson Park is like topping it for everything here. Gibson Park was just like absolutely flawless this Six Nations. I don't think he really put a step wrong.
I don't think he was as good yesterday or in the first half against England. To be fair, he had a very good second half against England.
Yeah,
I'll give him that.
He did
on the wing.
He did.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a reason why I said it, Hugh.
But I think even like sort of the way that he went onto the wing, and I wasn't sort of shitting myself. Sort of like, because he's played on the wing before for Ireland, and I'm kind of just like, oh, do you know what? It's like when Van der Flier took Lienerts for us last year. It was kind of like, it's kind of like that. but yeah, and also Crawley as well for your first Six Nations to build on Johnny Sexton, to fit in those boots and run with it. And he had what is it? I was looking at some of the stats. He's up there with he's the fly half with the most passes. Everybody else, he was number six in the most passes chart. He's high up there in the the running as well. Sort of his carries has been solid. He's not afraid to take contact as well. He loves to like look up, and he plays real heads up rugby, which towards the end of Sexton he sort of nobody really liked him going into contact because there was that injury issue. But with Crawley, he seems like he's always bashing up. Honorable mention to Le Garrick. I think he's a quality player. I think he's really good. It's almost like he's not like a DuPont, but he's such a solid scrum half. And I think for France, finding him, it's probably going to be worth his weight in gold one day, because with DuPont at the minute and how he's looking at different sports, like we might as well see him. He might be playing like for, what, where was he? The Lakers. He was at the Lakers the other week, holding up a wee. He could be trying any sport he wants, and he'll do well in it. So it's good that France have, in my opinion, a number two for that jersey because they can easily go to him and they won't lose. They'll lose like a bit of flair, which you get from Dupont, and a bit of like showmanship, but he's such a solid scrum half and he does things right and he just plays the game well. And then you sort of see that when he comes off, how much they sort of fall a bit. And sort of like the passing goes a bit haywire. And yeah, honorable mention to Finn Muscle as well. I do agree. It's but my 9 and 10 are going to be the Irish lads. But that's the bias. But also we're the champions, so I guess we could do it. It's going to be grand.
The
We'd be
two of
grand
us
to
are
chat.
literally wearing Ireland jerseys right now. I think we can
Oh
afford to be a little bit biased.
yeah, 100%. Yeah.
I think it's funny. I think if Ben White played last week, Scotland probably win, and his name gets in there a bit easier. I think if Alex Mitchell plays the full tournament,
Oh yeah,
he's probably in thereabouts. I
Mitchell
thought
really
George Ford
impressed
was
me.
okay. I'm trying to think. I thought yeah, Ramos was actually decent enough at 10. Go on.
I was gonna say Mitchell. He's really impressed me, because I remember a
He's
couple of
he is a very well coached player. You could see it in
he
his
is
progression the last year.
he is very well coached. I think when he played against Ulster, it was Ulster v Northampton a few years ago, and I think their scrum half was off injured and Mitchell was only called up. And I thought that he was a bit of like an average player. He just was sort of like that typical scrum half. But the way he's being coached now, he's came on leaps and bounds. And like that's the worry, because brother with Steve Botherick, he's sort of like this coach where if he has a player like Mitchell, he can make him really, really good, because he's the type of coach that would hone in on certain aspects and just coach it into him.
I think
And
it's before that. I think it's Northampton because I
oh
watched
yeah, oh
him.
yeah,
I've
to be
watched
fair.
Mitchell twice in 2 years with, at the game. Chalk and cheese. Just such different. And like, I'm sure Ben, you're probably at the two Northampton games in 2 recent years as well. Just so different. And I have to give credit to North. And I think to be fair to Northampton, they found a system that works for
Oh
all
yeah.
their players. But I think they're a very well coached team in
Oh
comparison to
yeah.
say, maybe like the likes of a Quins or Bristol or Leicester even. I think that's a huge difference. But we do have a couple of things to get to. I'm conscious of time. Ben, I've given you the centres. I kind of regret this because, I should have given you back three so you could argue for Calvin Napstein is, he's living up the road for you.
Definitely.
But anyways, we're so partial here. Centres, who do you have?
Again, I don't want to say Ireland, but Bundiaki has to be there. I mean, I don't think there's
You
any
can't not pick Manichello. You have to pick
that's
Manichello.
my rationale as well. I'm Bundy and Menichello, and I don't care that Menichello just play did not play 13 at all.
Those were my centres, Menichello. I kind of wanted to put Henry Slade in there. I thought he had a very good tournament when he played. He carried very well. He was great in contact. Fiku does an awful lot good. His passing is quite good. His meters carried was really good, which surprised me. Same with Henry Slade. I looked last night. I was like, he's carried for was it 240 meters, which was huge, considering the amount England kick and the amount Furbank did for England as well. But I don't think anyone in their right mind could leave out Aki and Menichello, considering the tournament he had. I mean, even if you're on defence, he played yesterday.
Oh
Like,
yeah.
again, apologies to you, I don't mean to be mean, but he tore Wales apart at times. He was terrific. Yeah, hat tip to Slade, hat tip to Lawrence. Fiku, I didn't have Robbie Henshaw really in contention, which is quite mean, but I don't think he's, didn't think he had a really, really good tournament. I have Slade
I think
over
that's
him.
the
I know that's
difference. He was
controversial.
good, but he wasn't very, very good. I'd have
Exactly.
Hugh Jones over him ahead because, again, Hugh Jones had a very good tournament.
Hugh Jones is a very good tournament. Exactly. And like, I know there will be stick for why didn't you pick Robbie Henshaw? Because he was very good. But Menichello, Ignacio Brex also, I know he got a lot of stick. Brex thought he was really good for Italy's system. Thought he
I
did
can't
really
believe
well.
Brex is 31. I just had in my head that
Is he
Brex was like mid
31?
twenties. Yeah, he's 31.
I would have
He's
said
been playing
25,
for Italy for
26.
ages. Yeah, but I just didn't notice, which is probably more on me.
That
But
makes him 10 years older than Manigello, by the way.
yeah, which is mad.
That's mental. No, look,
Lot of
I
young players in this team so far. Okay, fair enough. We didn't go with like McCarthy, and we didn't go with Le Garec, but if we had, they're all like 20. I think the oldest of them is 23. Jenkins, as well. Menichello.
Lagarek is 21 as
Le
well.
Garec's
Garrick's like
21, yeah.
21. Yeah.
Jenkins is still 21.
Yeah. Yeah, like,
Rugby's in good shape, huh?
Just a shout out as well to Palotta for Scotland. Big miss for them.
Oh yeah.
Big miss, yeah. He's important to, he's probably more important to how they play rather than how good he is on a consistent level. You know, he's their primary ball carrier up the middle. He's a decent defender. Scotland would absolutely look better if they had Bundy, and I think they'd look better if they had Ollie Lawrence.
But
But
it
they
goes
just
back to what
need
you
him
said
to.
a second ago. He's a system player. He's a big system fit, which is Henshaw's thing with Ireland. He's very good for Ireland and also how Leinster play. I'm unsure if Henshaw would do as well in a system that is slightly more kick heavy, where the ball doesn't go through the centre as much. I think you could put Mentello and Aki in anything.
Yeah, no, that's true. I have it here in the first. I only have stats for the first four games, but Henshaw carried 32 times, 27 into contact. Bundy 37 times, 36 into contact. There is a system element to that. You know, there's that to it. But anyways,
I
we'll
liked
go
his
from
shout
there.
for Slade as well. I think he's a class player, and I think he always has been.
I would have had, if not for Menichello being the absolute phenom that he was in this tournament, I'd have had Henry Slade there every single time. I think he was incredible this tournament. Really, really good.
Jack, I'll come to you first on your back three to round things off.
Wow. I have to go with, even though it was a brief stint on the wing, Stu McCluskey's 20 minutes against Wales.
Was Stuart McCloskey's 20 minutes on the wing better than Gary Ringrose's 23 minutes on the wing? That's the big
Yes,
question. Okay.
yes. Stu McCluskey didn't knock it
Clipped
on
off.
in front of the try line. So yeah.
Oh,
Oh,
harsh.
another. Oh
Adam, we
no!
can't actually see
I can't see
that.
that. Oh no! No.
Anyways, you're saying, Jack.
Zoom sees anything Ulster related and just blurs it out because it's like no one wants to see that stuff, you know.
I'm just so happy I didn't say
Caelan, what have you got on my laptop?
it.
Aside from Stuart McCluskey, who was apparently nailed on, Jack, what's your other wings up?
No, my actual back three. Yeah, I think it's actually quite tough because no one really had standout tournaments. You know, I mean, Doohan is one of the, was the top try scorer, but three of them came against England, so you can't really say that his tournament was excellent. Shut down quite
One of them was a
easily.
lovely cushioned header from Furbank
Yeah,
that set him up like.
yeah. And unfortunately, Ben Earl, the centre, couldn't quite catch him. But yeah, I think for me, it is really tough, but like Rio Dyer probably had the most consistent tournament of any probably player. He always seemed a threat. He always seemed to. Well, he got what did he get? Three tries? Maybe
Think
two.
so, yeah. Somewhere like that.
But just really played really well, and just anytime he had the ball, he just was so, you know, committed and just you know just backed himself. Really good. James Lowe, although he's not my typical type of, you know, winger, unfortunately, you know, you probably look at all of his stats and the way he performed in this second half against Scotland was actually, I think, pretty key to us getting over the line because some of his carries were just phenomenal. I mean, you know, we talked about how direct they got in the second half. Lowe is part of that, and now he's just bouncing fellas off. So
The one that set up the Bundy break was a huge moment in that game.
Yeah, and it's just his hands and getting the offloads away and things like that. I mean, he's just crazy. But yeah, like fullback is a weird one. I think Keenan, when he's taken out of the team, you see how much he's missed. But when you see him play, you just think, oh, he's just, you know, the Rolls Royce of a player. He just, you know, goes around, does the business, well-oiled machine.
I'll throw a question to the floor and you can just thumbs up or whatever. Is Hugo Keenan the best fullback in world rugby?
Yes.
That's
Yeah,
all.
100%.
Hugh, are you saying yes?
Yeah, I was Team Ramos last year, but
But Ramos the 10
had to
now, you know,
change.
that number
No.
wang has to kick in. You know, he's a
I know.
10.
He
Yeah,
doesn't.
no.
Keenan just needs to do the odd mad shit moment. and then I can properly like him.
His mad shit moment is the way he runs with looking like he has a bobblehead. That's as mad shit as it gets from Hugo Keenan. Jack, you're one shy. Or have you? Are you? Dyer?
Well, I'm going with Dyer, Lowe,
Oh yeah.
and probably Keenan. I want to go with Lorenzo Pani, but he only played the one game and scored a lovely try. But I'm sure he would have done that in the other games as well if Capuzzo wasn't there and Alan wasn't there. So yeah, it would
You
either be
what's or no, go on, Jack.
no, it would either be Pani or Keenan. Yeah.
You what's your counter? Is
Yeah.
it three different? Is it one
Well, no,
similar?
it's difficult to disagree. I mean, fullback's a tough one because Ireland, France, England, Scotland, Italy all changed their fullbacks. The only fullback who's played every game is Cam Winnett. And while I think he's nailed down that 15 jersey, which was up for huge debate before the tournament in Wales, no one knew he was going to play there. While he has absolutely nailed it down, he had some imperfect moments. I'm looking at his stats for against Italy, and his stats are actually, he's got a number in every box, but, I don't, you can tell that this is his first ever season of pro rugby. So I'm never going to hammer the guy. I'm just not sure I can put him up for best fullback of the tournament. I think the best fullback playing in the tournament was Hugo Keenan. It's just whether his minutes are enough to give him the jersey. It might be one of those where by not playing, you realize how good he is. One of those players. I think with the wingers,
Absolutely,
yeah.
100%. That's what it boils down to. And no disrespect to Frawley or Larmour, but I think against Wales, Frawley did not know where he was in the system. And that boils back to an earlier point we made. Larmour, they tried to protect him because he was coming in cold. And then in Twickenham, you really seen the difference between having Hugo Keenan trying to do everything. And he had played well and he looked like he had a knock in that game. He played really well. And that's when you miss him when he's gone. He's the definition of that.
Yeah, so it's kind of Keenan by default, I think. Wings, I think James Lowe is probably looking over at Tyburn and thinking, God, if you weren't a thing, I'd be player of the tournament nailed on. No one would doubt it.
Yeah, I
As
didn't
much
have
as
him in my team at the tournament because I went for the Bial Biari pick. I went left wings versus left wings, and I went Bial Biari, even though Lekip absolutely slayed him yesterday and thought he was just flash in the pan and nothing else.
Penno has not had as nearly as bad of a tournament as people say he has.
I was just going to mention him. He's look, his numbers are ridiculous, aren't they?
Yeah.
The
Yeah.
try he
Four.
scored against Ireland was unreal.
Yeah. And he was back to France, went full UBB against England. And it was great to
Never
see.
got above UBB against anyone.
So, in
Unless it's
fact,
Saracens.
tackle evasion, Penno is second. 56.7%, and first is Alex Mitchell, but Penno's carried twice as much as him. So I think Penno is still a class player. Class is permanent, form is temporary type thing. Kyle Rowe as well, underrated for Scotland. On the other wing to Duane van der Merwe, of course. Duane van der Merwe has to be a nominee anyway. I think he kind of suffers from he's too obvious, so it's not cool to pick him. But no, I'm going to agree with Jack. I think you got to go James Lowe on one wing, even though I still die on the hill that Josh Adams is a better player than James Lowe. I just can't prove it at the moment because that's not what the data says.
You could make
Would
a great series of Hughes hot takes, and it's just Adam Beard is better than James Ryan, Josh Adams is better than James Lowe,
James
and
Ryan, where
Thomas
is he?
Ramos is
Where
better
is
than
he? I didn't
Black.
see
I
him.
wouldn't overly disagree with one of those points, to be
Hey, I'm on a podcast with three lads
fair.
wearing Ireland jerseys, all right? I've got to fight my corner.
Yeah, that's
Anyway. So
fair.
this hat is actually Scottish made, so I'm
Oh
representing
wow,
Scotland on the
we are
podcast.
so
So
representative.
there
My
you
back
go.
three, and I
So
try to
sorry, just
keep.
hang on. I haven't
Go
picked my
on,
other winger
yes.
yet.
Oh yes,
So
sorry.
yeah. So,
It's Josh Adams.
yeah. No, it's not Josh Adams. A again, Josh Adams hasn't been as bad as people have said he's been, but no, I have to pick James Lowe. And I'm gonna go Rio Dyer on the other wing. Yeah, he has been like his stats against Italy in what was a terrible performance. 10 carries, 56 meters, four passes, four defenders beaten, two line breaks. Like Simon Raiola-Lewi tweeted before the tournament, why is everyone in Wales going mad about Emmanuel Feagbo-Bosso when you've got Rio Dyer? And I think it's true. I think Rio Dyer for ages in Wales was the if you know player. And now he's just everybody knows. So all of us hipsters have to find a new baby.
Yeah, the
Mason
fact that
Greenwich.
that's the first we mentioned Feagbo-Bosso actually says something because he was very good against Ireland. I thought Tommy Freeman had a quietly good tournament. I like
Very
Freeman.
true.
I think he's just the fact that he doesn't get the English media hype is probably a good thing, because they hype up lads who could score unbelievable tries created by someone else. So it's probably a good sign. I did go with Keenan, Nash, and Biabiari, and I'm unapologetic. I have to say, and this is the hill I'll die on, nothing proves how good of a coach Mike Prendergast is than the fact that Calvin Nash went from Munster's fourth choice winger to Ireland starter that made us not miss Mac Hansen in the space of 18 months. If any other coach did that, you'd be singing about it. So I'm just going to keep banging that. And Calvin Nash is huge talent, don't get me wrong. And I put it up yesterday on Twitter, like Nash and Tadhg Byrne, huge prospect out of school, didn't quite go their way. They waited, and when they had their opportunity, they took it. And I think that's really, really cool, especially when we go on about the pathways and how lads are anointed once they sit the junior search or whatever, you know.
Is no one nominating Elliot Daly then?
Absolutely not. Anyways, player of the tournament. No, to be fair to Elliot Daly, I actually feel sorry for him. He gets so much hype. He's a very, very good player. But I'm going to remember him for that slip that led to the final France try yesterday. Like, that's harsh, but it's just, I think it must be a Saracens thing.
He actually did a pickup though in that game. Like the ball was bobbling along the
Yeah.
ground and it was to Elliot Daly. And I was like, knock on, incoming. But he actually picked it up. So fair play.
I think he picked up the second attempt, but like he's
Yeah,
still picking
second
it up.
attempt.
Just picked it up.
Yeah, he's still got it, guys. Like, come on. Anyone else?
It's
We didn't mention Jamie
effort.
George. I think Jamie George had a good tournament. Should probably
Yes.
get him in there. I think, oh, who else? We did kind of mention McCarthy. He deserves a shout out. I think, oh Lord, who? I think there's someone else we're forgetting here.
Did Ben White get a mention? I think he's
Yeah,
been
I
good for
touched on
Scotland.
briefly. I think if he played against Italy, they win, and we frame everything differently. I think he's right up there. I think that's it though. Yeah, as long as we don't mention like all like what 120 players that would have lined up this tournament, I think we're doing all right. But unsung hero of the tournament, really, we're going to do this one quickly. Adam, you first, unsung hero.
Unsung hero, you said quickly, I'm really sorry. I'm gonna say Lamoureux. I'm gonna say Lamoureux
Okay.
for Italy. Didn't
Yeah,
put a
that's
foot
fair.
wrong. You know, yeah, there you go. Unsung hero. He
Hugh,
wouldn't
who's.
get all the oh, sorry. No,
No,
go.
go on.
I know he wouldn't get all the headlines, but he's certainly building something there. Like there's something building, and he's just gonna dominate world rugby in a few years' time, I reckon.
That's fair. Hugh, who's your unsung hero?
I'm going to go Scott Cummings for Scotland. Nothing is less unsung than a Scottish second row, and I think he's been pretty flawless.
Scottish second row, not named Gray. Ben, yours.
Like Eric, he stepped in very well. Very good tournament. Very much sealed up position. That was a problem for France, and they're not as absolutely screwed as they would have been.
There's an element of the France petit général line that we just all love and adore. Jeff, unsung hero.
Jenkins for Wales. I
Fair.
think he came in as captain for this tournament, poison chalice from day one, and he's performed admirably. He's led the side. He's played well himself, and he's been the ultimate kind of professional, isn't he? He's just turned up unlike Gatland. Does the media and does all that. So holds his hands up and fronts up when he needs to. So I think he's a great kind of leader. He kind of seems like that kind of Alan Wyn Jones kind of mold of just, he's just gonna work his absolute socks off, and he's the guy that you'd want to be captaining the side. So yeah, Jenkins for me.
Yeah, I'll go next. I'll go Rona Kelleher. And I hold my hand up. I was not big on the Rona Kelleher drum post World Cup. I thought his throwing was poor. I thought he's had shoulder injuries for those who may not know, and I think it looked like it in his throwing, but he's solidified that. He's got the power back in his carry. He's looked really good. Player of the tournament is next. I'll just go next. I'm going to go with Tadhg Byrne. I think if Ireland win a Grand Slam, we have a Tadhg Byrne moment in every game he plays. It's the try against France. It's the try against Wales. It's the turnover on the line against England. And even yesterday, maybe not as much, but he was ever present. And I think that's all you can ask for from a player. So I'll go him. Ben, who's your player of the tournament?
Ondiaki. Similar reasons as Tadhg Byrne. If Ireland were to do a Grand Slam, you can pick every single game where Bundy carries strong or he's in rucks. He makes his defensive tackles. Absolutely superb 5 games.
I thought there was pundits who said that, these guys shouldn't be in rucks. It should only be the big beefy forwards, but I suppose Bundy kind of classifies under that as well.
Leave out the biggest centre that Ireland possibly have, one of the biggest in certainly the home nations, and tell him, no, you just stand there and run. That's all you do.
Yeah, just pure NFL running back vibes.
Okay, quickly. Just yeah, people don't know that Ireland actually play with 10 forwards with Bundiaki and James Lowe. So
Yeah.
that certainly helps.
James Lowe had the best dominant carry rate of the entire Irish team in this tournament. Like, for I know he's getting a lot more one-on-ones, but
And that's saying something
that's
because
just
Ireland's carrying is phenomenal.
yeah, exactly. I have a feeling he was going to say James Lowe, but we'll add the suspense. Jack, who's your player of the tournament?
My player of the tournament, Tommaso Minocello. I think he's
Fair
just,
enough.
I just love him. And I just think it's a historic kind of and a historic season for Italian rugby now that it should, everyone's going to say it, but it needs to be the kind of sliding doors moment of Italy no longer get the wooden spoon 5, 6, 7 years in a row. And I think they're just going to cap off. They're gonna a round of assassinations each year. I think one of the teams is going to slip up. In a couple of years, it might even be Ireland. You know what I mean? Because if there's a change of the guard and players are injured and we don't have the same level of players coming through, or you just have a change of like I said, cycles work in strange little ways, might happen. So to all the Italian haters out there,
Which we are not. I don't think any of us five are. I don't think any of us are. So that's a good sign. Adam, player of the tournament.
It was a toss-up between to make a callback, Porter's left elbow, and but no, I'm going to say Bundiaki. He's been
The elbow can be your moment of the tournament if you want.
But now I've got another moment of the tournament. To be fair, but I think Bundiaki is just. He does everything, and I think he just improves and improves and improves with his age. And some of those hits he made yesterday, he just got so low. Some of the chop tackles, he just does everything right. When he puts on that Ireland jersey, he just makes things happen. And every time he's one of those players that if he gets the ball, the crowd automatically pick up, and something happens. And to have a player like that playing for Ireland. It's just it's special to have a player like that for a team you support. It's always brilliant, and I think Bundiaki is that player for us at the minute. He's just so well tuned, and he loves his rugby, and when he enjoys it, you can tell it. You can tell. He also he's never going to get sort of like a vice captaincy role, but you can tell how much he adds to that team. If a scrum goes well, he's the first one to go over, like
He,
sapping back and
he's
stuff. He
he's in
just
there
seems
when
to.
there's any sort of words going on
Oh
between
yeah,
players.
exactly. He would back you up. Like I would go to war for Bundiaki, but I'm sure he'll go to war for me as well. Like, he'd follow me
Exactly.
if I was wearing an Ireland
Well, he
jersey.
doesn't really like the Ulster fans. That's
No, he
the
doesn't.
only
And
thing.
then yeah, because there's that gif. There's
I
that
love
gif
it.
of him at Ravenhill, but yeah, I know. He does. It's just a bit of banter, I'm sure.
Hugh, I'll finish on yourself. Adam made me think of something that's slipped out of my mind now that I'm picturing the Bundiaki gif. But Hugh, who's your player of the tournament?
No, I'm going Ty Burn as well. Scarlet's Legends.
Nice.
I think he's ridiculous.
I'd agree. I'll start off the moment of the tournament, and it is the young lad who sang Ireland's call for the Italy game. That was class. I was there. Now, my only gripe is no one else sang, but that's also cool in its own right because he belted it out. But I'll go with that. And if it's not that, it's yesterday's anthems. And yeah, we're not going to get into that because that'll be an emotional roller coaster. We'll be here for 2 hours. So yeah, anthem related. It's the young lad and it's Pete. Jack, what's your moment of the tournament?
I think I was gonna go with Burns' try against France just because it just epitomized Ireland's attack. But I'm actually gonna change it at the last minute and go with a bit of a heartbreaking one, but the ball falling off the tee for Garbisi's penalty against France, because as a moment I was watching it, I was screaming. I was like, my wife was in the other room, I was just like, Italy are going to beat France. Italy are going to beat France. He's getting this kick. And he's 100% getting that kick as well, by the way. Like, it's an easy kick. And the ball falls off the tee. Like, absolute drama. And then hits the post. Phenomenal drama.
Ben, your moment.
Torn between Palm yesterday. I think that broke any Irish person watching that. Or the Olympico 2 weeks ago. In just when the 80-minute whistle goes, and there's just stadium erupts, motion everywhere. Italy finally get the moment they've been waiting for. And like, Italy or Italy. But it was just outstanding.
Yeah, absolutely. Hugh, I'll go to yourself. What's your standout moment from 2024? You're on mute there, Hugh. Sorry.
Apologies. I've got to big up the Welsh equivalent of what Ben's just referred to there and George North and the anthem yesterday. That is massive recency bias, but you could see.
No, you know, it's cool. Very fair.
It's cool to see players like that because as a fan, you think to yourself, that's how I would be if it was me. And fair play to him. And didn't end in the way that he would want it to end. He had a great game. I thought was into everything. He's ending his career on his own terms. He could probably go on another couple of years. I think Gats wanted him to go to the next World Cup. He's young enough. But yeah, just Welsh legends. And so closes the chapter on the golden era of Welsh rugby. And yeah, it's fair play to the guy.
Yeah. Sorry, just quickly on North as well. I'll be really quick. But I think everyone said, oh, it's a bit sad the way he went out, you know, had to go. But I'm like, nah, he went out on a shield, you know. He went, you know, had to be carried off the pitch. I was like, that is the best way.
In some ways, getting the ovation is the best way to go.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the fact that they were going to keep him on for 80 minutes, he wouldn't have got that, like, standing ovation of Cardiff. And, like, anyone who's been to Cardiff, you probably has, Ben has. It's unbelievable. When the whole crowd is in unison, there's no better place. And I felt like that was just a really poignant moment. Adam, did I come to you for more? No, your moment of the tournament, please.
Gatland having his Dan McFarland moment with the BBC interviewer. I just loved it because I was just like, man, it's like Groundhog Day almost just happened. I just couldn't quite believe it. I don't know where Wales go on from now, and I'm not saying that. I'm really sorry about this, but like, I think he should resign. I don't think there's any forward going in Gatland anymore. He just kind of looks sadder and sadder each tournament. And this that interview was like, whoa, like, that's what I'm going to remember. Like, not to dampen the Welsh spirits, but yeah, this having that moment, I was just like, oh, right. It's like just like a couple of weeks ago with our coach. It was just like, oh, it's nice to see on the international stage, you know, not as better like replicated, but still the same thing.
I was going to get into
not related to Gatland, but ever since watching Full Contact, I've doubled my fraud watch of coaches globally. Like, if you don't know the names of your players and you're just going around swearing at people.
That's very interesting because there was an Irish coach who is loved who didn't know which players were where and which players had already been sent home to their provinces there a couple of weeks ago in my cap. So maybe, Hugh, do you want to say the line? Do you think Mike Catt is on fraud watch, though? Is that what you're saying?
I think he's just on the beach.
There might be that, too. We were going to get into great the teams and hot seats of the coaches, but we really don't have time. We've been going on for quite a while, and it has been fantastic. It has been fantastic to watch Ireland win another championship. It's been fantastic that I have done two Six Nations-related winning podcast in 2 years. I mean, did I call all this? Maybe. I don't know, I guess. We'll leave it at that. And lads, thanks for taking the time to join me, not just today, but across the tournament. And Ben, on debut, smashed it, of course. Six Nations coverage doesn't end here. We've got a bumper week of the Women's Six Nations coverage to come. We've got interviews with internationals Anna Kaplis and Maeve Dealey, as well as a State of the Nation panel discussion and a tournament preview. So make sure to stay tuned for those. As always, thanks home to everyone for listening across the duration of the championship and across, well, the year gone by in particular. If you like what you see or hear, please do like, subscribe, leave a review. Let us know what you felt. Maybe you've got a different opinion on moment of the tournament, player of the tournament. Let us know. And you can find all our links below. But for now, and until next time, take it easy. Sports Social Podcast Network.